The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. This is our last show of the week. Finally, Friday. Well, I shouldn't say finally. It just races along. Here we are already on the last show of the week. If you'd like to send us your feedback, send those emails to td@kpcg.fm. Well, when you think of European nations with nuclear weapons, you first think of Britain. In France, those two, obviously. But if you've read the trumpet.com or followed the trumpet.com for very long, you know that there are about 180 or so, 180 nuclear bombs being stored all across the continent, in the Netherlands, in Italy, in Germany, down in Turkey. Of all places, and also Belgium. Now, technically, these nuclear weapons belong to the United States, but there they are, being stored in five nations, in these underground vaults in five nations, which means that together with Britain and France, you have seven nations in the European region that have nukes, nuclear weapons. Now, as I say, the ones in those five nations belong technically to the United States. Those bombs were deployed there along with other military hardware during the Cold War, which was supposed to have ended in 1991. But during that time, during the Cold War, the bombs were intended to stop the Soviet Union. The thinking was that in the event of a conflict between the Soviet Union and Europe, that the U.S. would then hand over these nukes to their host nations, and then those nations would drop those nuclear weapons on the Russians, on the Soviet Union. Well, today the world is in many ways very different, although the threat from Russia is certainly reemerging. But it is a different world, there's no doubting that. Last week after that attack in Brussels, you may remember that it was reported that the jihadists were also targeting a Belgian nuclear power plant. The thought was that they would maybe seize control of the materials needed to make a dirty bomb. But as Jeffrey Lewis asked at Foreign Policy just the other day, why settle for a dirty bomb when you can have the real thing? He then refers to those 180 nukes that the United States has stored on European soil, including a handful being held at a Belgian airbase just about an hour outside of Brussels. Kleinbrogel, that's the name of the airbase. And the security, Jeffrey Lewis points out in his foreign policy piece, the security at Kleinbrogel and other sites, but he focuses in on that one in Belgium. He said the security at that site is shockingly bad. He talks about just how terrible it is in his piece, which, by the way, is titled Belgium's Failed State is Guarding America's Nuclear Weapons. You look at what's happening all across Turkey, particularly at its border with Syria. They're hosting nuclear weapons. And then Belgium, which Jeffrey Lewis calls a failed state. There it is, trying to contend with this upsurge in terrorist activity and and guard these nuclear weapons. The subhead in this piece says Washington's traditional nuclear strategy isn't keeping Europe safe. It's putting everyone at risk of apocalyptic terrorism. How much have you heard about this? Probably not much, given what typically appears in the regular news cycle. Lewis talks about this project that he worked on at Kleinbrogel, this airbase in Belgium. Back in 2009, he was gathering data for the nuclear posture review, this report that he was gathering information for. And he says at the time, this is just 2009, 7 years ago, he says, at the time, senior U.S. military officers made one thing very clear to us. The security at the bases stunk. One commander noted that the upgrades necessary to meet security requirements would run into the hundreds of millions of dollars. You see a lot of headlines today about, well, the funding that needs to go into NATO to shore up its defenses, particularly against the rise of Russia. And now you have all of these terrorist atrocities that they're having to contend with as well. And Donald Trump is out there saying NATO needs to revise its strategy. Everyone needs to carry its weight. The United States needs to stop paying for it all. So in many ways, it's a very different world. But coming back to this example, he's talking about what happened in 2009 and just the feedback they were getting from U.S. officers, military officers, saying just how terrible the security was at this base. Another, he says, said his worst fear was that a group of activists would be able to get inside the shelters where the nuclear weapons are stored and use a cell phone to publish a picture of the vaults. And then, Jeffrey Lewis says, it happened. It happened in January 2010. A group of protesters who call themselves bomb spotters entered Kleinbrogel, the airbase. Apparently, the plan was to hang around on the tarmac of the runway and get arrested. But no one came to arrest them. So they wandered around for either 40 minutes or an hour, the accounts differ, before walking through an open gate into an area with hardened aircraft shelters for the base's F-16s. Eventually, as the hippies continued to wander around the shelters, security arrived. The security force, he has that in quotes, was one moderately annoyed-looking Belgian guy with a rifle, an unloaded rifle. The effect would only have been more comedic if he had some powdered sugar on his face and maybe a little bit of waffle stuck to his uniform. The protesters were briefly detained, but not for long. There was no panic. The mood in Belgium seemed to be something like, "You crazy kids." "Not to worry," the Belgians assured their American partners. "The activists weren't anywhere near the shelters with nuclear weapons. Don't you worry. No need to panic. Everything's okay. The one guy with the unloaded rifle, he's got it under control." So, a few months later, the activists entered the base again. Well, what do you know? They helpfully sent me a little note this time. And this time, they not only got inside the proper area, but they also got inside one of the shelters. Security never showed up. Apparently, the base commander found out about the incursion with the rest of us, or rather when the rest of us did, when the activist posted a video on YouTube a day or so later. This was literally the scenario the U.S. military officer had warned us about. Hippies inside a shelter with a cell phone. Security nowhere to be found. Yet, Jeffrey Lewis goes on to say, still no panic. Still no panic. Well, he goes on in his article and talks about another incident that happened a couple years after that, 2009, 2010, 2012-ish. What about these close to 200 nuclear weapons spread across the continent. Now, as I said, you know a little bit about this development, if you can call it that. If you've been reading thetrumpet.com, if you subscribe to the Trumpet magazine, my father had an article just 2 years ago in the Trumpet titled Europe's Nuclear Secret. Europe's Nuclear Secret. And he talks about this very incident that Jeffrey Lewis brought up in the piece at Foreign Policy just the other day. The incident at Kleinbrogel Air Base. One of the bases that has these nuclear weapons. My father even went back further to give it more context, just to show the danger. In 2001, he wrote, this is my father at thetrumpet.com, this base, Kleinbrogel, was the target of an Al-Qaeda extremist named Nizar Trabelsi. In 2010, the same base was penetrated by peace activists. That's the one that Jeffrey Lewis wrote about. It says, later, the activists climbed the perimeter fence and wandered around the base for more than an hour, videotaping their escapade. And when they were finally caught, base security didn't even confiscate the videotape. My father says this, it's appalling that the U.S. is so careless with something so deadly dangerous. I mean, say what you want about the Belgian security forces, but these are America's nukes. These are at least 180 of them, nuclear weapons, sitting in facilities such as this. My father says this is the kind of mistake that will have terrible real-world consequences. This is the kind of mistake that will have terrible real-world consequences. Look, this is what you should be hearing on talk radio. This is what, these are the kinds of stories that should be making headlines. As it is, you don't hear about it. As it is, there's no panic. There's no cause for concern. We've got everything under control. I mean, they didn't get actually right down into the vault and they weren't straddling the weapon. Do you think that the European nations that host these weapons are as indifferent about them as America is? Well, you know what my father was getting at in that piece. How that those weapons are going to be taken and used, and maybe not so much by Islamic terrorists. I mean, that could happen too. But America has essentially abandoned them. And they're just left there in these deserted facilities. Back to this Foreign Policy piece by Jeffrey Lewis. He says, which brings us back to the terrorist attacks in Brussels. Do we really want to keep these weapons in Belgium in light of what we now know are very large and organized jihadi networks in that country and France? Or in light of these security failings? He says the rationale for keeping nuclear weapons in Belgium and other NATO countries is the idea of burden sharing, the notion that Belgium and other European governments should share political responsibility for defending this contribution to their national defense. Yet what contribution are U.S. nuclear weapons making, precisely, to European security? At present, they seem to pose more of a threat, a temptation for local terrorist networks. It should come as no shock that European countries have been so lax in their defense of those weapons, both rhetorically and in terms of security measures. This is what I would call burden shirking, and Belgium is Exhibit A for the phenomenon. And so there they are, these weapons, gathering dust in wide open facilities. Will this come back to haunt the United States of America? Well, I'll give you some quotes later in this segment from my father's program on the Key of David, from Herbert Armstrong, writing back in the 1980s, I think it was, about these very weapons finally hear this Jeffrey Lewis piece at Foreign Policy. It says, but more to the point, why does the United States still think nuclear weapons are a crucial symbol of our commitment to Europe? The Obama administration has done plenty of things to strain the transatlantic alliance. Obama did himself no favors in skipping the show of solidarity after the Charlie Hebdo attacks last January. And his recent interview in The Atlantic, in which he accused France, among other U.S. allies, of free riding on the U.S. military, he says that has the French people, their blood is boiling. And then there is the nagging fear in Europe that presidential candidate Donald Trump's absurd remarks about renegotiating NATO hint at a growing isolationism within the United States. And so, yes, then they hear these comments by Mr. Trump, the Republican frontrunner, talking about how the NATO alliance needs to be renegotiated. In fact, he's talked about how NATO itself needs to be revamped. But so far as I can tell, he said nothing about the 180 nukes. What about those? You can go back to, this is around March 21, a piece from the Washington Post. So about a week and a half ago, that's when it made headlines what Donald Trump said about NATO. The Washington Post said Donald Trump outlined an unabashedly non-interventionist approach to world affairs Monday, telling the Washington Post editorial board that he questions the need for the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, which was formed, which has formed the backbone of Western security policy since the Cold War. So here's Trump out there questioning the need for it. But again, what about the nuclear weapons? It's one thing to say every other nation needs to pay their fair share. It's one thing to say, well, if there's trouble in Ukraine, that's for Germany to take care of, or that's for Italy to take care of, or that's for whoever to help with in Eastern Europe. But what about the nuclear weapons in the Netherlands, in Germany, in Belgium, in Turkey, in Italy? They're just sitting there in facilities like this Belgium airbase, about an hour north of Brussels. This Washington Post piece, it quotes Trump saying, Ukraine is a country that affects us far less than it affects other countries in NATO, and yet we're doing all the lifting. They're not doing anything. And I say, why is it that Germany's not dealing with NATO on Ukraine? Why is it that other countries that are in the vicinity of Ukraine, why aren't they dealing? Why are we always the one that's leading potentially the Third World War with Russia? Why are we always the one? That's not really that far removed from what President Obama thinks. Lead from behind. Let someone else do it. Why does America always have to step up? You guys take care of that problem. It's your mess. And we say, what about the nuclear weapons? It says Trump said that U.S. involvement in NATO may need to be significantly diminished in the coming years, breaking with nearly seven decades of consensus in Washington. He says, we certainly can't afford to do this anymore. Well, he's right on the money point. NATO's costing us a fortune. And yes, we're protecting Europe with NATO, but we're spending a lot of money. So he says, we can't do this anymore. Now, again, he's not the president yet. And the way things are going, his campaign may be imploding. In any event, he's still the front runner on that side. And here he's talking about significantly diminishing America's involvement in coming years, should he become president. And it's bad enough that right now America doesn't care about these nukes that are just floating around. What about when the presence is nearly gone? What about when America's presence and power, what's left of it in Europe, has vanished? Can you see the stage being set for multiple prophecies to be fulfilled? Not least of which, the signature prophecy that Herbert Armstrong talked about for decades, the emergence of a beast power right out of the heart of Europe, the resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire. Where will they get their nuclear arsenal. Where will they get the weapons that they need to fulfill all of these prophesied events? Jeffrey Lewis concludes here and says, and compared to these challenges, all these challenges Europe is facing, it says, and compared to these challenges, a handful of nuclear weapons matters very little, except for the risks they pose in the context of radical Islamic terrorism. Well, and we would add to that, and the risks that they pose in the event that this resurrected Holy Roman Empire decides it wants to help itself to the arsenal that's just resting there on its own soil. As my father brings out in that piece back in 2014, the bombs were made for the host country's airplanes. It's not going to be that complicated to just go in and, well, help yourself. There's a piece here from Bloomberg View, how Poland's president is unhappy with what President Obama is doing to try to strengthen NATO, given the reemergence of Russia and Russian aggression. It says here, President Barack Obama's administration has announced a huge increase next year for NATO's presence in Europe. Again, this is what Donald Trump takes exception with. But here's Obama finally following through to beef up NATO in response to the Russian aggression. It says here, but Poland, for one, is upset that most of the new money and equipment will go into Western Europe rather than to those alliance members on Europe's vulnerable Eastern Front. And so here it's the nations on the Eastern Front that are the most vulnerable, and yet Mr. Obama's beefing up the ones in Western Europe, like Germany, France, and so on. It says later, this week, the Pentagon said it would soon start rotating an additional full armored brigade in and out of Eastern Europe, part of Obama's administration's European Reassurance Initiative, a fourfold increase and so on. It says later in the article, I asked about the $3.4 billion U.S. program at a meeting with reporters Wednesday in Washington, where he was attending the Nuclear Security Summit. The Polish president said while having more NATO and U.S. troops rotate through Eastern Europe was positive, that's only one half of what NATO needs to do to ensure Russia is properly deterred. The conclusion of the piece says, you want to do away with this perception. There's a NATO A level and a NATO B level, but the European Reassurance Initiative perfectly reflects that there is, he said. The majority of the spending and equipment will go to Western European countries. And so here you have all these nukes just sitting there in those five nations. And then where it is being beefed up, it's benefiting those in the West. It's benefiting the strong and prosperous nations like Germany. Now you go back to an article from last year. We referred to this on this program. It's from June, talking about the reemergence of another Cold War. It's from Spiegel magazine. It says, for some time now, the Americans have once again been thinking about upgrading Europe's nuclear arsenal. And in the past week, a rhetorical arms race has begun that is reminiscent of the coldest periods of the Cold War. A high-ranking official in the Russian Foreign Ministry spoke in March, this is March of last year, about possibly stationing nuclear weapons in Crimea. And the Americans, too, are considering expanding their nuclear arsenal in Europe. For some time now, Washington has been thinking about positioning nuclear-equipped cruise missiles in Europe, as it did in 1979. The new U.S. plans are only the latest step in an overall period of rearmament, a dangerous development that had already started before the outbreak of the Ukraine crisis. It's just a toxic mix, isn't it? Putting all of these things together. There's 180 nukes already there, and now if there's more that are added to that, even as the United States continues to weaken and continues to turn inward and continues to pile up debt, what will happen? The worse the problems get in the United States, given the disinterest that's there already for the 180, what happens a few months from now, a year from now, 2 years from now, as the problems just continue to worsen internally for the U.S., domestically for the U.S.? Even as we've left all of these weapons in Italy, in Turkey, in the Netherlands, in Belgium, and in Germany. Well, if you've been following thetrumpet.com, you've been hearing about this now for a number of years. Let me take you back to my father's TV program, the Key of David program. This is from October 9th, 2013, the title of the show, Europe's Dirty Secret, clip one.
But if you think about the potential debacle that is here, it's just mind staggering that those weapons could be turned on us. There's not a thing in the world to stand in the way of those nations just taking over those bombs and using them in whichever area they want to use them in. Now, this is something that is downright frightening if you think about it for very long. And I'll tell you what the U.S. is doing is absolutely condemned by the Bible, because it's a matter of trusting in others rather than trusting in God. And America has designed those bombs to be used in planes of the host country. They designed them that way.
That's the way they were designed. Do you think this through? Do you think this sounds crazy and far out? And when you consider the prophecies that are being fulfilled now, and furthermore, just to think about the mind of man, the heart is deceitful above all things, and it's desperately wicked, God says. It's just hostile to God and His law. How could you look at this world and not conclude that it's just every man for himself, every man doing what seems right in his own eyes? Who's to stop someone from coming along that says, well, you know what? It seems right that we should take those weapons for ourselves now. After all, they've just been sitting there collecting dust for these past several decades. And look at the explosive events, literally, right across Europe, in Paris, in Brussels. Where's the next target? No one would really scoff at the fact that if those jihadists could get their hands on one, they'd take it. What about when the crises just continue to pile high? And you have more and more nationalist parties rising up in Europe, calling for a strong leader. There's got to be retaliation. There's got to be someone who draws a firm line in the sand, or furthermore, who goes on the attack. From Daniel 11:40, the push and the push and the push, and then the whirlwind. That's what's coming. And look, Europe's right in the mix. It's right in the heart of that prophecy in Daniel 11 and verse 40. And Iran is too. And so, of course, the United States is there helping Iran to construct nuclear weapons of its own. It's all building, isn't it? It's all building. Here's another clip, clip two, from that same program in October 2013.
You think about it, 350 nuclear bombs. in six little countries in Europe, and maybe not so little as far as their power is concerned, with enough nuclear bombs to destroy the world. What kind of a world is this we live in where these bombs have just been proliferated all over the world? How can we ever deal with this problem? How can we ever solve it? It gets worse by the month, not better.
How can we ever solve this problem? Think about the world that we live in. I gave a program last year, if you remember, on just the worldwide proliferation of nuclear weapons. I forget the figure. It seems like it was something like 10,000. Or no, maybe it was more like 16, 17,000 nuclear weapons in the world today. This is the world that we live in today. Are you concerned? Do you have faith in man's ability to solve these many problems that just get worse and worse with each passing month? Let me just play one final clip. Here's my father back in 2013 basically saying, you know, NATO needs to be revamped. This is a couple of years before Mr. Trump came along.
Now, it should have been, you'd think it should have been stopped, that program of giving those bombs to those nations when the Cold War ended, but that didn't happen. And those countries could certainly take control of them any time that they wanted to.
Yes, it should have ended in 1991, but it didn't happen. And now here we are in 2016, and I mean the challenges that Europe is facing, the challenges that the United States is facing, they're not even thinking about those nukes sitting in those desolate vaults in those five nations. They're thinking about who pays what and where the new armaments go and should it go to Eastern Europe or Western Europe and how that Germany or whoever else needs to pay their fair share and how that Germany needs to step up. Germany needs to do its part. And meanwhile, the weapons are just sitting there. Nuclear weapons. And they're not even being guarded, really. And they supposedly belong to the United States of America. In the article that followed that program, I just played clips from, my father said, America's forgotten what Hitler-led Germany and Mussolini-led Italy did in World War II. America's forgotten. This seems to be in our nature. We've forgotten what happened. We've forgotten about the nukes. But this is a problem that's not just confined to World Wars I and II. The combination, it says, of Germany and Italy is really the heart of the Holy Roman Empire, which has risen up six times to cause bloodshed like no other empire in history. Six times it's happened. Do we remember this history? Is it significant that the Bible says there's seven resurrections of this empire to come out of Europe? Now you can get our booklet, He Was Right, where we talk about some of these same things. All these nukes just sitting there in Europe. It says, and He Was Right, as Europe cannibalizes NATO, don't be surprised if it cannibalizes these nuclear weapons as well. The air forces of each of those NATO nations have personnel trained in arming and delivering this hardware. Don't be surprised. I mean, this is something we wrote years ago. So when it happens, whether it's an Islamist terrorist cell that gets in there and confiscates one, or whether it's the host country itself, when it happens, don't be surprised. You've heard it here first. This is from Herbert Armstrong, one final quote. He wrote this back in 1980. This was in the Plain Truth magazine, April 1980. He said, "You may be sure that West European leaders are conferring hurriedly and secretly about how soon they may unite and provide a united European military force so they can defend themselves." I mean, he just wrote this 36 years ago about these nations in Europe uniting and talking about how they can come together and defend themselves. Do you think they're talking about that today now? I mean, if he was saying this in 1980 and the Union hadn't even formed yet, well, now it's here. I mean, it's going to be dramatically restructured, we know. But now the Union's here, and now the U.S. is pretty well, I mean, they've beefed up NATO here in this past year. But for the most part, Europe is more and more left to itself to figure this out. This is, as I say, Herbert Armstrong from 1980. It says, "And so they will no longer have to give in meekly to Russia. And who will they blame for their humiliation and their necessity now to have a united Europe with a united government, a common currency, and a common military force as great or greater than either the USSR or the USSA, or USA, sorry. Let me just go back. Who will they blame for their humiliation of the necessity to have this united Europe, this united government, this common currency, this common military force? They will blame," he said, "the United States. And when they are strong enough to assert themselves, they will first attack Britain for standing firm with the U.S., and then they will return a lot of hydrogen bombs the U.S. has stored now in Europe." That's what Herbert Armstrong wrote 36 years ago in the Plain Truth magazine. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on KPCG 101.3 on the FM dial in Edmond, Oklahoma. The live stream's available at the trumpet.com website and also at the kpcg.fm website. Send us your feedback this weekend. Take some time over the next couple of days to tell us what you think about the programs from this past week and to tell us where you're listening from and how you listen in. Email us at td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. In 1945, the detonation of the atomic bomb in Japan brought an end to World War II with overwhelming force. This new technology ended the worst war this world had ever experienced. But with it came a new, dangerous age. The age of atomic and nuclear energy had arrived, accompanied by weaponry capable of destroying all life on Earth. Man's number one problem now became that of human survival. After signing the Japanese surrender, General MacArthur spoke to America and the world about peace. And with it, he brought a grim warning. He said, "Men since the beginning of time have sought peace. Military alliances, balances of powers, leagues of nations, all in turn failed, leaving the only path to be by way of the crucible of war. The utter destructiveness of war now blots out this alternative. We have had our last chance. If we do not devise some greater and equitable system, our Armageddon will be at our door. We offer you two booklets at no cost or obligation to you. We Have Had Our Last Chance provides a hard-hitting, concise history lesson about the end of World War II and warning given by General Douglas MacArthur. In The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What It Will Be Like, Herbert W. Armstrong shows you where world evils are leading and how God will bring about peace and plenty. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. Are we living in the last days? Some dismiss the notion as fanatical, but world leaders and news analysts are issuing warnings that are becoming more and more dire. Could Bible prophecies about the last days actually be accurate? Our brochure can help guide you through the relevant news and history and help you compare these events to what the Bible says. Are we living in the last days? This brochure is available for free right now at thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
Well, we've been on quite a roll here with requests coming into the program, the TV program here in the UK, as you've been hearing the last few weeks. The response, I think, to the last three programs in particular, just really strong. And coming up tomorrow and on Sunday, we'll be repeating the program we first played back in August last year, The Most Important Book Since the Bible. So another opportunity to plug Mystery of the Ages. That was one of the big programs last year when we were making the big push for 2,000 Mystery of the Ages requests. It first played, I believe, on August 6th and brought in 215 requests. And then we repeated it about 3 months later, 3.5 months later, I guess it would be, in early December, I guess about 4 months. And the repeat in early December actually brought in 220 requests. So both of them pulled in more than 200. So we thought coming into this weekend, we were in a bit of a pinch and thought, well, it's been another 4 months or so. So it'd be good to run that one again and hope and see if we can get up over 200 yet again. I know we've advertised Mystery of the Ages more than any other piece of literature this past year. So there may be some saturation point, I suppose, coming up with at least with the CBS audience over here. But at the same time, because the audience has been growing and because the response levels have been higher, we can certainly be hoping for another big response. We'll let you know again on Monday what this weekend, this coming weekend, was like. Well, this article here, Victor Davis Hanson's latest, Why Westerners Make Inviting Targets for Terrorists. He has some just some wonderful points he brings on or into this article throughout. And it's from yesterday. China has a long record of persecuting its Muslim minorities. Russia has brutally suppressed the separatist movement of the predominantly Muslim Chechens with bombing and shelling. Russian President Vladimir Putin ordered airstrikes against Syrian Muslims without much worry over collateral damage. India has zero tolerance for Islamic radicalism and hits back hard anytime Muslim terrorists attack. So it's a little different in some of these other nations that just won't tolerate it. They strike back hard. And so you don't see as many terrorist attacks in those nations. Given the severe backlash elsewhere, why do radical Islamists prefer to strike Europeans and Americans from Paris to Brussels to Boston and San Bernardino? No place has more open or has been more open to Muslim refugees than the United States and the European Union. Together, they've accepted several million immigrants from the Middle East since September 11th. And how about that? I mean, here these other nations strike back so hard, and yet the arms are wide open in Europe, in the United States, welcoming in millions from the Middle East. It says the EU and the U.S. lavish foreign aid money on the Palestinians. America has offered a half century of support to Jordan and Egypt. It's much easier to be a Muslim in Europe than a Christian in the Middle East. And then you add to that all the overtures made by the president he brings out, President Obama. He started his presidency eager to win over the Muslim world in 2009, it says. In an interview with a Dubai-based TV news channel, he emphasized that he has Muslim family members in his own family. Hansen writes, Obama's NASA director redefined the space agency's foremost, quote-unquote, mission as Muslim outreach. You might remember that early on in the Obama presidency. Obama has sought a closer relationship with Turkish President Erdogan, despite Erdogan's Islamization of Turkey's shaky democracy. And then he talks about alienating Benjamin Netanyahu, our closest ally in the Middle East. He talks about apologizing to the Turkish parliament for America's sins. President Obama did this. He bowed before King Abdullah of Saudi Arabia. And then Hansen says the president's Cairo speech mythologized Islamic contributions throughout history and downplayed Western achievement. He says the Obama administration has in effect banned the use of the terms jihadism and Islamic terrorism. It prefers a host of euphemisms for Islamic terrorist acts, from workplace violence to man-caused disasters. CIA Director John Brennan redefined jihad as a holy struggle of Islamic self-purification rather than a Quran-sanctioned campaign against infidels. Obama granted theocratic Iran plenty of concessions in the agreement to restrict Iranian nuclear proliferation. And despite all of that extraordinary presidential outreach, the West remains under constant terrorist threats and episodic attacks, often from Muslim youths who are offered sanctuary in places such as Belgium, France, Massachusetts, and California. Well, he goes on and gives some reasons why the jihadists prefer targeting Westerners, aside from the fact that if they go elsewhere, as it says at the start, they get smashed in return. But it talks about the West being so wealthy, caught up into materialism, now that the immigrants prefer the higher standard of living in Paris, and how that the West is obsessed with mandated equality, and how that the West is so lax, obsessed with multiculturalism. He says Islamic terrorists sense that Westerners are increasingly materialistic rather than spiritual. And he says at the end, terrorists seem to believe that as long as they avoid another 9/11-like massacre, they can continue to take lives and insidiously weaken the West without awakening it from its morally indifferent slumber. And they may be right. In other words, they sense weakness. I mean, there's a satanic hatred as well. There's a spirit behind it all, of course. There's Israel as the little Satan and America as the great Satan, as Benjamin Netanyahu often says. And now you see Europe being drawn into the conflict more and more, even as the U.S. weakens. And so many prophecies really are shaping up to be fulfilled exactly the way God says that they will be. On yesterday's program, I talked a little bit about the clemency, President Obama granting clemency to 61 more federal prisoners. And according to the New York Times, that's not nearly enough. That's not nearly enough. More should be let out. The Times, in an op-ed piece this morning, it says, in the spring of 2014, the Obama administration announced an initiative to consider granting clemency to thousands of federal prisoners serving what Mr. Obama called unjust sentences for low-level drug crimes. Now, we went through the list, an abbreviated list yesterday, of these so-called low-level drug crimes. And the Times here is pointing out that President Obama back in 2014 talked about thousands who had been given unjust sentences. Many of them, as I went through yesterday, themselves trafficking drugs. Well, after the president talked about these thousands of unjust sentences, the Times notes federal prisoners were notified of the project and more than 30,000 responded by submitting surveys to begin the process. The New York Times says despite the relatively high number of commutations that Mr. Obama has now granted, there are still more than 9,000 pending commutation cases, many of the sort singled out in the 2014 initiative if as potentially worthy. So why has the president acted on so few? I mean, it's 248. Okay, that's more than the last six presidents combined. But look, there's thousands more to be released, the New York Times says. It says, finally, if we're going to make good, if he's going to make good on his administration's promise from 2014, Mr. Obama needs to take action soon. And he should. The value of mercy is profound and lasting. He should take action soon. Of course, what they're suggesting is more executive action, please. Let the thousands and thousands out of jail. And meanwhile, the homicide rates just continue to climb in America's biggest cities. Chicago, for example, so far this year, 135 homicides. We're a fourth of the way through the year. 3 months. 135 homicides. It's on pace to pass 500 for the year. That's one U.S. city. 500 in 1 year. It's a 71% jump over last year. 71%. It's the worst quarter since 1999, 17 years ago. Shootings, way up. 727 people have been shot in Chicago so far this year. Last year at this time, 422, another 73% increase. That's a little snapshot of U.S. cities. That happens to be the worst one. But the trend is the same, as we've covered on this program. The trend is the same. And yet you have the New York Times, which pretty much serves as a blueprint for the mainstream media, calling for thousands upon thousands of prisoners to be released because, well, the value of mercy is profound and lasting. What is happening to the United States? Is there a sickness? Do you detect a sickness in the United States from head to toe, as it says over in Isaiah chapter 1? There is a sickness, that's for sure. And yet at the same time, there's a real healing. There's a real healing that's coming. The new world that's going to spread over the earth. God's already started that world with his work, with his church today, as small as it is. It starts always. It always starts like the grain of a mustard seed. But that little seed has been really sprouting forth. There's been a lot of growth in God's work just in the past several years. And that's because God is preparing to spring his world, his kingdom, on this current world, this dying world that commences, as we know, with the soon coming return of Jesus Christ to this earth, the ultimate solution to these many problems that we see today. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show as we put the finishing touches on yet another program, on yet another week. This is the Trumpet Daily, radio show with Stephen Fleury, 101.3 on the FM dial, headquartered in Edmond, Oklahoma. The live stream is available on our websites. This broadcast comes to you live via the live stream from Edstone in the beautiful West Midlands, right in the heart of the UK. Send us your emails over the course of this weekend. Send those to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today. Thank you for joining us this week. And we'll see you again next week.